Sound check, we're doing fine? 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, we're recording. All right, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. All right, we're gonna do that series of questions. You look, you don't, instead of looking at me, look directly into that camera.
Okay.
That would be best.
Sure.
Now, you don't have to do that all the time.
Okay.
But for this, for the impact
sure.
of it, for the veracity, we need
all
that.
Right.
All right. Your name is Catherine Pollard Griggs?
Yes.
You are the wife of Colonel George Griggs?
Yes.
11 years of marriage?
Yes.
It's true that your husband is has been the head of special operations under Admiral Kelso, NATO?
Yes.
And it's true that you were the head of the hospitality committee?
Yes.
You were the a member of the executive board of NATO's Wives Club?
Absolutely.
And also that your husband's background includes NATO Defense College in Rome?
Yes.
Princeton class of 1959?
Yes.
His intelligence career, spy career, began in Vietnam?
Yes.
And it's also true that it continues under this day?
Absolutely, under General Wilhelm.
And that your husband was the liaison between the White House and President Jamal of Beirut, Lebanon, at the time of the bombing of the Marine barracks in Lebanon?
Yes.
And in fact, your husband was an alcoholic?
Absolutely.
And probably
Incredible.
Is to this day.
Absolutely.
And during these drunken stupors, he would, so to speak, blab on and tell you everything he knew about the intelligence
everything.
Community.
Everything.
Nothing was hid.
No.
It was like he wanted to relieve himself and unburden his heart.
Yes.
And so he told you everything that you now know about
yes.
the intelligence community.
Yes.
And that you are talking about. And in fact, he told you that they knew the bombing was coming down in
yes.
Beirut before it occurred.
Absolutely.
And also, by your association with him, you have come to understand and know, this, as shocking as this may sound
yeah.
to the people who are viewing this, that the United States military is literally run by sexual deviants heavy on the homosexual side.
Truly.
And that the United States military, people like Jeffrey Dahmer and Kaczynski and McVeigh
yes.
and Oswald and a host of other people who
yes.
have a sexual deviant background, primarily homosexual, these individuals are actually sought out by people within the military,
the Army,
for advancement
yes.
into intelligence type
yes.
work
yes.
because they are so easy to control.
Yes.
And they actually become mind slaves, and that the U.S.
yes.
military,
yes.
literally, as,
yes.
as outrageous as it sounds, is a mind control operation.
Yes, totally now. Totally now. They've,
okay.
they've gotten rid of the good folks, like MacArthur. Got rid of them, one by one.
Good.
Totally take over.
All right. Let's talk about the individual who told you that we've never actually been an enemy of the Soviet Union, that somehow that's
yeah.
all just been a scam. Who was that individual?
My husband. When we the first 3 years we were married, he was drinking 3 or 4 straight gins, vodkas a night, a bottle of wine, and a beer machine beside his desk. I only knew him 2 months before he asked me to marry him. He'd been married before, and his first wife was a total alcoholic.
Now, someone would ask, why would you marry a man after knowing him only 2 months?
I'm a strong Protestant Christian, and I have a lot of predestination. I'm a Scottish grandmother, and I was working as assistant director of the Chamber of Commerce. I had a brand new, relatively new Saab, my first car. It was an 83 Saab. I bought it secondhand from somebody who's 84. And my husband was driving an 83 Saab. Mine was a turbo, his was not. He rented part of my house. It was, I had a young doctor and his wife and 2 children who were renting the house. They were leaving before the end of the lease time, and they put the ad in the paper and told me about all these people, and I said, no, 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 no. And I was had been engaged to someone else. You know, I was just renting my house out. And they said that there was this man who had a dog and a mother-in-law and a son and was a widower and a Marine colonel. Well, it had a dog, and I said, no, absolutely not. So the point that I'm trying to make is that he was someone I was not really I didn't cotton to. He sort of acted like a robot. He was very clipped, and I didn't want to like him. But when I heard he was a Princeton graduate, I always thought that was kind of great. When I heard he spoke fluent French, and I speak fluent French, when I found out that he drove a Saab, I drove a Saab. And when I found out that he went to the same school, high school, that my uncle had gone to, was in the same eating club at Princeton that my uncle Ben had gone to. He was on scholarship and went to Princeton. Everything the same as my uncle, who was also in intelligence. But I didn't think about that then. I was just thinking, you know, this is God. This is too much, too many similar things. And so it overwhelmed me. And he's very, very good looking. At that time, he was very good looking. Now he's aged, and he really is haggard.
Had a rough life.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was overwhelmed by him. Plus, my job at the chamber was very demanding. I was doing a great job. But he said that he wanted me to retire because he wanted to make general. And the man who could make him general was General Louis Buell, because it was just a matter of having somebody who would make you general. To be general, it wasn't what you did.
Mm-hmm. Louis
just happened to die, and we went to his funeral, and George didn't make it because Louis died. But his first wife had been, I'm sure, battered to death. I was battered, and but I thought it was just Vietnam and all this kind of thing, and I was trying to get him to stop drinking. Because I couldn't imagine how the Marine Corps would allow someone to be a total alcoholic who couldn't even carry on a normal conversation dry. I mean, he can't even carry on a normal conversation with anyone unless he's drinking. He never smiled unless he had a glass in his hand. He drank solidly. I have a letter in his own hand that tells, and this is the truth, he drank solidly this amount that I just said for 30 years. His booze bill, and they never entertained, he and his first wife, was $250 a month. And this is from the naval store. Now think about that. Mm-hmm. He was totally snockered, just his whole brain, and yet he's working. He is head of running half the world's Marine Corps under General Al Gray.
A man who is mentally incapacitated.
Totally.
Unless he's inebriated, and then when he's drunk, I mean, he's in a different, altered state of mind.
He can't discern anything.
He can follow orders.
Oh, and that's all he does. And he told me one of our many conversations, he was trying to, he thought I was, you know, because my family were all naval officers and I was out in the world with the chamber, you know, that I just sort of went along with this kind of stuff. And, it was just incredible to me that...
How many wives of high-up military people are there, like yourself, that are speaking out?
None. I mean, they're all 30-year Marine wives. They're Stepford wives. They are petrified. I have had conversations before I went public, before I went to live with Sarah McClendon, who saved my life.
And Sarah McClendon is
the senior White House correspondent.
Is she that little old lady we see on TV asking
yes.
the president those pointed, jabbing questions
yes,
all the time?
Yes, the little red-headed, feisty Texan who broke the Billy Saul Estes thing. She doesn't go along with the clone group of reporters mm-hmm. who are all, most of them, intelligence officers. I think she was in intelligence because she was in the Army during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just a remarkable mind. And I lived with her for 5-6 months. And what's interesting is she called my home after I had called her or seen her on C-SPAN. She couldn't get through to my house. I was living there by myself. Every time she called my home, this is 1996, from March until she finally got hold of me, she had to go to another phone in Maryland to get me on the phone. every time she called me from her house, she was told, this is a military base, and the Griggses don't live here anymore. Now, that was my phone number long before I met George Griggs. Mm-hmm. It's my granddaddy's farm, the house that I
owned. Well, so your phone was being diverted.
Absolutely diverted. It's electronic warfare. Mm-hmm. It's part of their deception. They have many levels, but it's all under a big operation. They have an operation now to totally ruin me. His first wife was murdered.
Now, you know, some of the things you talk about here, this big operation, you've come to understand about the largeness of it, the intricacies of it, through a diary that you have. Is there?
Yeah.
Could you hold that diary up so we can get a look at that? And the thing that I found, this is the actual diary. I just hold it up kind of like chest high.
Okay.
There you go. And these are the actual handwritten notes of your husband.
Absolutely.
And they reveal an awful lot. In fact, does the military or those in the intelligence community, do they realize you have a copy of this?
They do now.
Yeah.
I had a phone conversation with General Jim Joy.
How long ago was this?
It was in February of 96. I tried to ask the colonels. They knew I was on the move, trying to find information.
Uh-huh.
And husband had mentioned General Jim Joy.
Yeah, it's hitting the microphone right there. Just
Sorry.
That's fine.
All right. And I called General. I had to call a General Miller in Jacksonville, who was in my husband's address book.
Uh-huh.
And told him I was looking for Christmas card list, and you know I needed General Joy's telephone number because one of the colonels whom I trusted, Colonel Ken Millis, lied to me. Captain Phil Hallwager lied to me.
Uh-huh.
And so I got this General Jim Joy, who was the one who was in the operation Just Cause. Was it Just Cause, the one in Panama?
Mm-hmm.
He was in charge
Of
all the psychological operations, the booming music that they hit Noriega with, the chasing him around, the
stealing the same stuff they did at Waco, too.
Of course.
We'll get to that in a minute.
Yes.
Okay.
That's General Jim Joy, who was behind Waco.
Oh, I see.
And General Carl Steiner, the snake.
Okay.
Who tried to steal Desert Storm away from Schwarzkopf.
Okay, so but you were trying to get some addresses, and they were giving you the complete runaround.
Oh, don't even know him.
Don't even know him.
Don't even know him. And I knew him because my husband told me, you know, that he worked with General Joy and General Steiner. They were the triumvirate.
Uh-huh.
But they had different names. They were, you know, in plain clothes. They had different passports. So I got him on the phone. I was given the number by this General Miller. And I said,
so in the movies, when they say they shall disavow any knowledge, that's not just little thing for movies. That's the truth. They disavow knowledge of
totally
all these people.
Lie.
Yeah, but you nailed him down.
Yes, I said, General Joy, I'm Kay Pollard Griggs. My husband George Griggs was in the Marine Corps, and he is he's battered me badly, and we're looking for him. Because, you know, this has been going on too long, and blah, blah, blah. And I was recording this conversation, you see. I was sitting on my bed with the diary right out in front of me. And he didn't know that I had the diary. He didn't know anything. It was cold call, like they do cold murders after when they graduate from SEAL school. Cold, cold murders. I was doing a cold telephone call. And he said, no, I don't believe, and these were his exact words, no, I don't believe I know your husband. This is someone my husband, I have a card that General Joy sent my husband after the murder, of the death of his first wife, saying, call me anytime. You know, this man, here I was, traumatized, battered, beaten, and he lies to me. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, General Joy, that's funny, because I'm looking at my husband's diary when he was in Beirut, and you're meeting with him almost every day. said, you know, first, before that, I said, you know, he was the chief of staff for General Al Gray, you know, he's one of Gray's boys, you know, chief of staff of Fleet Marine Force Atlantic, runs half the world, all of the Middle East, NATO Defense College. You don't know my husband, you're a general, you live outside of Quantico, don't know my husband. I made it very clear.
Uh-huh.
No, can't say as I do. So then I told him about the diary, and these are all immature adolescent males. These are men who don't know how to deal properly with adults. They lie. They're deceptive. They hide behind trees.
But when you nailed him on the diary, you realized...
He said, his exact words were, "Oh, that George Griggs."
Uh-huh.
Oh, that George Griggs.
And that's just the beginning of the kind of runaround deception that you've found with these people.
Absolutely.
And no doubt, that's why they would like very much to have this diary.
Yeah.
This one page I found particularly interesting. What you and you're probably more familiar with their husband's handwriting. Instead of me reading it, read these notes that he had recorded there. These might help.
Okay, I've got these.
All righty.
A number of the Marines told me a little bit about Dale Dorman. Dale Dorman's not a happy camper.
Okay.
Dale Dorman, because of some mistakes my husband made, was shot. It's 7:15 to 7:30. Dorman exited Riviera. That was a place, sort of a hiding place or whatever. Gray and tan Mercedes. Up to 5 shots were fired. He raised his left arm. One round penetrated his arm. One struck his chest. Walked back into Riviera to the desk and called Post 1. Security vehicle went to pick him up. Returned to Dura Found, 15 to 18 meters away, and treated. Medvac call 7:50. Medvac wheels down at 0810 in a H-Bird helicopter, Riviera Hotel, approximately one-ninth of a mile west of the embassy. Dorman has been there since arrival, except, briefly during a period of siege. He was not wearing protection. Saw 3 men in the vehicle. One leaned out back with a shortened rifle or automatic weapon. Sentry at B1 saw and heard nothing. It's just one page of the diary.
Sentry saw and heard nothing.
Right.
In other words, the sentry...
Don't talk.
Doesn't talk.
Right.
Yeah. And there's just a whole world of these kind of assassinations and murders.
Yes.
And directed. In fact, at one point, your husband actually just discussed people being eliminated.
You're
shooting ducks.
Yeah. Oh, we had innumerable discussions over dinner. He'd already had his 4 gins. Now, he'll talk to any woman or anybody who drinks with him, he'll talk. This man, what is he doing in security? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
When he was at NATO, I'll get right back to that, but when he was at NATO and he was the head of special operations, in fact, I've got copies of his secret check in and out papers at NATO. He had them at home. I hope I still have those, but anyway, the point is I could get in and out of the NATO headquarters just walking in, and there were all these shady looking garbage men, and George would leave his office door wide open at lunchtime. He was flirting with a secretary who was a chief who knew everything. You know, the point is, what lacks security? And I had to say, George, look, you have got to do something about the security here at NATO, because I can walk in and out. He said, oh, just forget it. Forget it. Don't do anything. And I'm a very demonstrative person when it comes to security and honor and integrity and your word is your bond. My culture, my father, my people believe in this nation, in my state, Virginia, my people, my culture, my God. You know, this is this is important. You don't just treat that kind of thing lightly. So I said to him, if you don't do something, I'm going to Landis Kelso. I was in the Wives Club. She was the head.
And Landis Kelso is
the wife of Admiral Frank Kelso, who's a wonderful man, honorable man, wonderful woman. And I had great rapport with her. I sort of stopped an international incident with the French and the English and the British who were ganging up against the French. And they were over, you know, something that was really minor, but it was huge. And she helped me. I determined that it was a problem, called her up. And she helped me, and we diverted and averted a major thing. So he knew what I would do, and I said, look, if you don't write a report and do something about this, then I'm just going to go to Landis and say what's happening. Point is that the man would, when he was in Beirut, he was sleeping with a spy and double agent Mary Clark Yost Taleb, whose husband was a double agent, an Arab at the American University of Beirut. He leaves his briefcase wide open. He was with her for 5 weeks in a hotel. This is a married woman with two children, and who followed him all around the United States, is still seeing him, met him in London, lived in Virginia Beach, was working in international programs at ODU he was married.
Would you say your husband is fairly typical of these powerful men?
Oh, absolutely typical. When I was single, working at the Virginia Center for World Trade, four of us old friends that I went to school with, Molly Holt and, you know, a few others, we would go all together to a place called Poppy's. At that time, he was Captain Jerry Unruh. Now he's Admiral Three Stars Jerry Unruh. This man, again, was married. He was running around with the tailhook crowd. I did not know he was married. I knew he was a Navy captain. I was told by him that he would be taking command of the carrier Saratoga. Mm-hmm. He followed me everywhere, even went up to Wintergreen. Now, he sent me pictures, private, separate pictures of the Israeli guys waving to him. He was a tailhook pilot, you know, the airplanes, mm-hmm. the jets. And he was a Mustang, but totally immoral. Totally, and knew that he would never get caught. In fact, he was in tailhook. They had a big party down at the beach, and I didn't go by that time because I learned that he was married. And the point is that he and this whole group, I've found out about Al Gray, you know.
General Al Gray.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that, what is this this consistent thread of the sexual degeneracy and the homosexuality and just the raw base nature that seems to be so prevalent? Have you ever determined what it is? I mean, why?
Well, it's a way to handle them, to control them.
I mean, years ago you thought of people like General Eisenhower as an upright man. I don't know.
I know some things about him.
How far back can we go to where you find people that are decent, moral, and upright?
Right.
Where you had real people who defended the Constitution, who had a feeling.
Robert E. Lee was.
There were nationalists and America first. You got to go back a good ways, probably.
Absolutely. You see, growing up in Norfolk, Virginia, my whole family have been naval officers and also working. In other words, they would enter the service during a time of war, of need, and then they go back to being fathers and being husbands. I had a wonderful father, wonderful grandparents, wonderful family, who put their family first. Well, they put their God first, Christ, and then their wives, and their sons, and their children. This is the way America was built. Now, these generals in the Marine Corps and Army, they don't look at it that way, according to my husband. A court, they're ordered, my husband being chief of staff, told his men it was like this. It's the Marine Corps first, the brotherhood, the cherry Marine, you know, the bonding that goes on. Mm-hmm. The Marine Corps comes before God, before Jesus Christ, before the country. And then it's the whatever the religion they have. I don't know, because my husband is not a Christian. He's an existentialist. And most of these guys are. Certainly Al Gray is. Krulak. I think his wife goes to church,
But their God is this brotherhood.
The brotherhood, and it's very German. It's very.
Does it have Masonic leanings?
Oh, absolutely Masonic leanings. In fact, the admiral who was the last admiral whose car my husband bought, he was very impressed with this Norwegian admiral. Mm. They're all Masons now.
Mm-hmm.
Not all Masons, but this brotherhood, Opus Dei, if they're or the mob. I mean, the one thing I've been able to determine about the current Marine Corps that my husband came in with, Gray, Reap, Sheehan, they're all mob.
Now, when you say mob, you're talking mafia type?
New
mob?
Jersey mafia, right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And there's a...
Brooklyn, New Jersey.
Okay, is the mob and this military bunch, they're this one and the same?
The Marine Corps guys are the hitmen. And they are mercenaries. They'll work for anybody. You think the Marine Corps is under the Navy? No way. They can just as easily be under an Army colonel. And if the Army colonel meets a Marine Corps colonel, the Army colonel is superior. They'll switch hats just like that. My husband said it's just, you know, no big a deal. I'll go work for the State Department. I don't really. The Marine Corps is just it's like a smoke and mirrors thing. And they're run out of New Orleans. 4th Marine, Oswald. I mean, they are not on his level. He said, we've never been an enemy of the Soviet Union. They work with these communists. The man who started this whole intelligence operation, the OSS, he was recruiting known communists who were involved in the Spanish subverting Spain. You know what? There's no more. They're not Americans. They're not Christians. They're German existentialists. Now, what are they doing running our nation? They have more affinity for the state of Israel right now than they do our nation. They don't care about American citizens. The judges now in the courts are military officers following chain of command orders. They're not independent judges.
So all this spills over then into the political areas, like the judgeships.
Sure. They're all Marines.
Senators, congressmen.
Sure. Who is John Warner? A Marine. Who is Chuck Robb? A Marine. They control the powerful committees. Dick Davis, Lieutenant Governor of Virginia. A Marine. His wife was, I hate to say it, well, everybody knows, in Norfolk, a prostitute. You know, Martha was a wonderful woman, I'm sure, to him, but they were involved in organized crime. Now, I don't know, I know that our present governor in Virginia is an Army officer. He takes orders. So the question that all of us wives are asking now is, well, who gives the orders? If they're told that we, the wives, are enemies, how are the sons going to grow up? If the mothers who are teaching them truth are lied to, and the husbands are told, ordered by the likes of Al Gray, major homosexual, when he was in the, I shouldn't say this, but it's true, when he was in Marseille, the boys are called Gray's boys. He never married.
Okay, the boys referring to everybody under
boys,
him.
Everybody under Al Gray. And he had a separate organization while he was commandant that was a contract organization, getting information on people, having them, if they weren't corrupted, corrupting them, farming people so that he would have something on them so that they would use that later to control and manipulate them. It's like what happened to Newt Gingrich. All of these guys, like Newt Gingrich, Bill Clinton, who've gone through the sweats, like Cohen, what happens is they get a little tiny thing that, to prove their power, how much power they have. They use guys like Michael Isikoff in Newsweek, or their little clones, you know, like Woodward and Bernstein, who are operatives.
Okay, they're former military, too.
Oh, my goodness. They were, I believe it was Bob Woodward. It's either Woodward or the other one.
Bernstein.
See, I knew some British intelligence people. And I was told the whole story about how he was running around with Peter Jay's wife, who was the ambassador to Great Britain. And this man was sleeping with Peter Jay's wife. And there was a movie, I think Jack Nicholson was this guy, and this was her story about what she went through while her husband, the columnist, was sleeping with the ambassador's wife to get information on what was going on in Great Britain. Now, this is the team that broke Watergate. So what were the motives? Of course, Watergate was horrible, and Nixon had something like 60 military JAGs alone working for him, doing dirty tricks. One of those JAGs was Ernest Frank Reynolds. Changed his name to Ern Reynolds. He came to me. I was farmed. Tim Hunter, an intelligence army operative, came to me with this story about, oh, you know, hard luck, you know, Saudi Arabia, and I was in the army, and I have this friend who can help you out with your legal case. He's a really good guy, you know, Ern Reynolds. And if you meet him, I know he'll do some free legal work for you. So I was staying with Sarah, and I didn't have any money, and but I took the little, you know, the train into Fairfax. He met me in his Volvo station wagon with his jacket on. I didn't know what the big four meant on his leather jacket. And he took me to his...
What did it mean?
4th Marine.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Operative.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the most fantastic apartment. See, I'm a big book person, and I love, you know, reading history and everything, and I'm impressed by people who read, who are intelligent, who are wise.
Yeah, you have a master's yourself in
Scottish history, an undergraduate in Virginia history.
Okay.
I worked on the Dunmore papers. I studied with people like Ian Cowan and Jeffrey Barrow and Tom Devine. These are scholars in Great Britain who are experts on the Reformation. And my interest was Mary Queen of Scots at the Reformation, and also Lord Dunmore, who was the last royal governor of Virginia, and I was working on the Dunmore papers, too.
I see.
So
you had an interest in, I mean, this guy's layout impressed you.
Yeah.
He's a real intellectual.
Yeah, and he was divorced, you know, saw a sad story and everything, mm-hmm. worked for the Justice Department, mm-hmm. was supposedly a whistleblower,
mm-hmm.
supposedly a Christian.
So this guy's really going to help you out?
Mm. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Boy, did I buy into that.
It's like the old story, I'm from the government, I'm here to help you.
Oh, yeah. So I caught him sneaking around my house at 2 o'clock one morning.
2 in the morning?
Yeah, and of course, I'm most gullible in school, you know. So I'm trusting, I'm a Christian, and I always look to the good side of somebody. I see the good little part. It took me about 3 times. The guy had my original documents that had just been in my briefcase under his car seat. He invites me to a cybernetics conference in Champaign, Illinois. I leave Martha Roundtree's apartment, and it's arranged so that all of my things are in his safe little car, and we're going to his parents' house in Roanoke. And of course, you know, you can't take all your things to the cybernetics conference, because I was going home.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a smooth psychological operations guy. I mean, he is doing psychological operations on a woman in Champaign, Illinois, who is the lover of a German spy, who he's been writing letters to her, and he's showing me these letters. The guy's perverted. I mean, he's writing Susan Parenti these letters, you know, like invading her mind, and, you know, why are you... And Susan's written him two letters or three letters. She's very beautiful, and he's got pictures. But he's sharing these letters with a group of men, seven men, one of whom is head of intelligence, is head of computers and the intelligence for the Army, Ron Jarmuth. Now, Ron Jarmuth comes right out and says, I'm an anarchist. You know, I mean, his family are New York, old Zionist Jews. He met his wife in, I think, in a kibbutz. You know, I mean, he's a nice, personable guy, but when you say to somebody like me, I'm an anarchist, just so blithely, and you know, and he's always over at Ernst's house, and Ernst's got a picture by his bedstead drawn by a man who's a known homosexual whom he met when he was at the University of Virginia, who was the chaplain at Hollins College, who my best friend was there. And she said, he's a well-known homosexual. And I'm thinking, what is a picture of Ern Reynolds doing being painted when he's young by this known homosexual? And then I find out that the man who enlisted him in the Republican Party, he was doing dirty tricks for 7 years for the Republican National Committee. I mean, dirty tricks. Underneath this man from West Virginia who was a homosexual and left all of his money to Ern's son and took his son on a trip. Now, and Ern is a lobbyist for homosexuals. He's just, you know, working in the Episcopal Church. He's got a group of women that he meets with at the seminary. I'm sure that my case, my profile, he's probably got charge of it now. He's the expert on Catherine Pollard Griggs, but he's not. The guy is absolutely not grown up.
But
he's a thief.
And so your case just got stonewalled, just got sucked into a memory hole by a guy who was acting under orders to.
Sure.
You get Catherine Griggs under your control,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
that's that.
Sabotage, yeah. Sure.
And he stole your documents.
Sure. Sabotage me. Turned on me right in the middle of the commissioner's hearing. Hmm. Laughed at me when I cried. You know, this is a guy who hates women. And the interesting thing is I went to his family home, and he had a wonderful mother. And he told me that his father battered his mother. His father was in the Marine Corps. And there was a picture of Chesty Puller in the basement.
Well, that fits the profile, though,
yeah.
Doesn't it? I mean, if his father battered the mother,
mm-hmm.
which he grew up in this dysfunctional environment.
Totally dysfunctional.
So when he hit the military, or he was noticed in college or ROTC or whatever, so here's a guy who is susceptible to mind control.
Sure, he's
to
got,
be developed.
Yeah,
I think you use the term for budding. He was recognized as a potential bud.
Yes.
And he's moving up the ranks.
His roommate was from New York, was a Zionist, and he was an outcast at the University of Virginia.
An outcast?
Yeah.
Why would he be an outcast?
He felt he was an outcast. So he had this roommate. And I don't know this man who was the homosexual from West Virginia.
Uh-huh.
And we had to go by through his town, and, you know, the guy died. But this homosexual was a friend of the homosexual at Hollins, who was a chaplain there at Hollins College, whom I met. We had lunch with him one day. the father had the picture of Chesty Puller and so forth. Well, Earn, I knew he was trying to sabotage me and so forth, because I had already had Alexander Robinson come down from Princeton every other weekend, my husband's teacher, who was also a Marine, whose family brought over the Saudi royals, who was one of my husband's teachers, and I caught him walking around my house at 2 o'clock in the morning. I overheard him talking to my best friend's mother, saying, "Now we just, you know, undercutting me. You know, we just don't know. Kay is just under so much stress, you know. Oh, and he's a very handsome, very dignified guy, you know. Went to Columbia University, was in Algeria, that area with the Marine Corps. Then went into the boys' school, the Hun School. He's in intelligence, without a doubt. His brother-in-law was Bill Eddy, Colonel Bill Eddy, who was the, I believe it's the brother-in-law, I've got to get, his name is Eddy, and it's Bill Eddy, but he was the translator for the Saudi royals during the Roosevelt administration. And the Roosevelt, the New York crowd, was trying to steal all of those countries away from Great Britain. The Balfour Declaration had sort of come in, and there was a guy named Moose, not the present Moose, who has the Africa desk at the State Department, who's an African-American, but this was a guy named Moose who helped the State Department steal Saudi Arabia away from Britain, because Britain was allowing the Saudis to be Saudis, you know, to keep their religion, mm-hmm. to keep their culture.
Right.
They were not trying to kill people right off the bat, you know. So George is part of that OSS crowd.
And their stock and trade is just murder, assassination.
Absolutely.
Creating conflicts, phony baloney wars and
yes.
conflicts.
Yes.
For the purpose of making
selling weapons,
money.
Money, drugs.
Drugs.
Controlling the drug flow.
Now, let's talk about the drug flow in the United States.
Yeah.
Based on your conversations with your husband.
Mm-hmm. I met drug lords through him.
Such as?
I met the head guy. See, George was telling me everything. First 3 years of marriage, it was just like, you know, you're with me, gal, because he was so used to talking to Mary Halab and Anne Bouchou.
Yeah.
You know, the group partnerships with sex and all this stuff. And you know, I'm a pretty loving woman, and I'm fun. I was then.
But you're not into swinging.
No, I'm not into
and
swinging.
And swapping husbands and
no,
wives.
No, George was into swinging. He and Sue and Nancy and Jim Earl. You know, I mean, this was, and I heard about that from colonels mm-hmm. and one Navy captain.
But then your husband also would tell you that this is just life the way it is.
Oh, yeah.
In our crowd.
Oh, yeah.
All these generals, admirals, colonels,
oh, yeah.
all these people.
Yeah. Men, just, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but he was just trying to remember what we were on, something that was that I was going to say, and I remember. Anyway, I can't remember.
Oh, he's talking about the fact that they're into making money, and
yeah,
this is
yeah.
the drug business.
Oh yeah,
so you met all these drug
yes.
lords.
I met Fahim.
As if they were just business partners.
Oh, yeah. Well, he told me what they did. Mm-hmm. He, you know, Fahim was a colonel. He's in the diary, too. But George said what they do is they nurture, they cultivate the sons of prominent families in all, the State Department finds them.
Mm-hmm.
They're called rising stars.
Yeah.
And they turn, that's the word they use, George used, they turn them, they bring them in, they rope them in. If they're alcoholics, give them more booze than anybody. If they want women, you know, they find the women, they turn them, and then let them know if, you know, if they ever get in any trouble, come on over here. We'll take care of you. Well, Fahim had come on over here. Things were getting hot in Beirut. He was a Catholic. He was very prominent family. And he was going in hiding up in Maine. I remember I had his number, and I talked to his sister. But they just culled a lot of the stuff out of the house the very first time when George kind of disappeared. And, you know, and then I found out about what happened with Sue, his first wife, yeah, and all of that.
Well, now, did they... did you come to learn how drugs actually come into the country?
Yeah.
I saw a news piece one time where a pilot who was in prison alleged that they actually landed on military bases with huge planes loaded with dope.
This is how they all brought them in, the Norwegians, the Brits. The drugs, you see, they would come down through Burma, Turkey. They'd come through the Bekaa Valley. The banks were in Beirut. They were in Panama, Mexico, in St. Thomas after, you know, the laundering of cash. You see, cash, that's why some of the banks in New York, you can very easily find out who the drug lords are. Barry McCaffrey, I saw him 2 weeks ago, and he said something, he let it slip out. He's an army general, you know. He said, we haven't done any more or any less in the last 5 years. Now...
in terms of the war on drugs?
Yeah, no. They're just holding it. The word he used, I think, was holding it. It was a word that you could tell they'd used in briefings. And they were... The guys who were doing the drugs are military officers. In fact...
doing the drugs, meaning controlling
them.
The flow.
Oh, yeah. In fact, one of George's best friends, Colonel Ray Moore, I suspect that Ray Moore was from the gang, the ghetto area in California. His wife was a very good friend of mine, Charlotte.
She's dead?
No, he is.
Oh, he is.
But when George would sort of disappear...
Your husband?
Yeah. All of a sudden, they would appear and be in the house. You know, calm me down, take me over, exercise, you know, do all this mystical stuff. And it was really funny because they came back from Mexico. And it was, George just happened to disappear and they were right there, you know. Well, Ray Moore, all this stuff, I knew about his background and I started thinking, what's going on in Mexico? Why the heck is Ray going down to Lake Chapala? And he would talk about his day. His day would be going out with the men, playing golf, going to this spa with the men, you know. They were doing deals, going to Guadalajara. And there would be Tom Reap, another former chief of staff for Ray, going to Mexico. There would be Ken Millis, another temporary chief of staff. When George's wife's funeral took place, there was Ken Millis. Now these are guys who are part of what's we call the Brotherhood, and they're all going down to Mexico. So what's going on in Mexico? Ray's one of these guys who wants to sit in the sun. He doesn't want to go down there to Mexico and do all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But he did. And he got cancer all of a sudden. And another guy got cancer all of a sudden, right after he got out of the Marine Corps.
Now, not to diverge from what we're talking about right now, but did your husband ever tell you anything about any disease warfare, like giving people sicknesses?
That's part of, he called it ABC, NBC. Was something like nuclear, biological, chemical, ABC, atomic, biological, chemical. They call it biologicals. And in fact, I'm not going to mention his name because this is a guy who's really a good guy who's scared. The word they use is shitless. Excuse me. But that's the word. This guy is petrified.
Because?
Because he's doing that work.
The chemical?
And biological work. The marine...
You mean the laboratory work or the implementation?
Dealing. Subterfuge, deception in
okay.
the Middle East.
Okay, and they use...
he's a Marine Corps
colonel. Disease-causing drugs?
Absolutely.
And then how do they administrate them?
With... In missiles and in I mean this is an elaborate big business. Like Peter Khawaja, mm-hmm. Marine Corps guy, who's working in plain clothes at one of the plants in Florida. This is why George is in Florida. This is why they're all down in Florida, because all of this stuff is being we manufactured the chemicals and biologicals that were in Iraq. Now, if you don't believe me, you don't believe Peter Khawaja, a Marine Corps colonel, he says they killed his wife, I believe him. He worked in one of these factories. It was supposedly a candy factory where they were manufacturing deadly, deadly killer things. The Marine Corps, Al Gray, Krulak, Carl Mundy, he's in the CFR. He was in Ken Millis's class, who was the chief of staff, the one who controlled me. You know, I went to his mother's house in Seven Mile, Ohio. Flo, his father was a German Nazi. I'm not saying that, you know, being a German Nazi is bad, but he's part of this group. And if you don't believe me, if you don't believe Peter Khawaja about the drugs, you can, I mean, it's everybody knows. There's a guy named Randy Hebert, Lieutenant Colonel, hero, American patriot. This is a guy who should be the commandant of the Marine Corps, Krulak. I'm talking to you, I'm talking to Al Gray, I'm talking to you, Carl Mundy. You all are adolescent, immature, I call you twerps. You're liars, you cheat, you steal, you kill, you're beneath the contempt of any of your wives. They are scared to death. Why do you do this to your wives, guys? Look at that tape of Randy Hebert. I knew Chesty Puller, and this is a strong, wonderful guy. I knew his wife, Virginia Mack. I knew a real Marine. You can't say that you knew them because you didn't. I did. Randy Hebert sat. He could hardly talk. He was leading a platoon into Iraq. His wife was sitting to his left. His wonderful father was sitting to his right. And he said that his colonel, he's a lieutenant colonel at that time, I believe he was a lieutenant colonel, he said, my colonel ordered me, he said, all of our registers were saying, this is danger. There are chemicals, biologicals everywhere. I was told, and I was, you know, followed orders, and he was having a hard time talking. His wife was, this is a young guy. His wife was having to interpret for him. Mm. He was crying. He'd been turned on by you guys. He said, on those canisters, on those boxes were American flags. Those were American
biologicals agents.
That we were walking into that killed me, that you, Gray, and you, Scrocoft, and you, McFarlane, and you guys knew, you, Ed Wilson, best friend of my husband, you all sold to Saddam Hussein. And not only that, I talked to the man who trained the woman who was sent over from Iraq to learn how to build the biologicals and chemicals, the plants. She was trained here in the United States, and you all know that. And Randy Hebert's testimony says everything that I could say a million times better, because this is a man who's a real man, unlike the generals, unlike the colonels. This is a real hero.
Now, is Randy Hebert, is he still alive?
I don't know, and I hope and I pray to God that he is. Because this is the man who should take over our Marine Corps, or his wife. That's why they don't have any women in special operations. Because that's why they don't have any African Americans. They're too honest. They're too strongly Christian. Now, the only guy I know who is involved is a homosexual. And his buddy is an Israeli agent. And they are lovers. They're a pair. But
he's now
a colonel, and he is under the guidance of Ken Millis.
Okay, now as these generals over the period of years, this is consolidated to where they're all part of this club. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is something that's been going on for years and years and years.
Members of the firm.
Okay, so as the firm grows, even as the old guys, the gray heads, get old, die off, retire, whatever, they already set in motion a system that culls out these young, budding, rising stars, and they move their way up. Yep. Well, then, in time, it consolidates to where no one is in this unless they're in the club.
Absolutely.
So is your conclusion, based on what you know from your husband's revelations, reading his diaries, this sort of thing, is there anybody in the U.S. military, the Army or Marines, anybody in the level of, you know, your generals and your colonels, is there anybody who would not be in this club?
There's nobody who doesn't know. In special operations, I would say, and I would put money in the bank on this, not one of them is not a party to this. It's not a. Once they get that bird, colonel, that bird, they go through an initiation ceremony. This is not a. And my husband told me about that too.
What's the initiation ceremony like?
They get them drunk.
Dining
in, shell back. He told me.
Oh, dining in. This is a term that they use.
Oh yeah.
A code
yeah.
word.
Oh yeah.
Shell
yeah.
back.
Shell back. They.
What's that mean?
Anal sex. But they get them really drunk. The guys who were that way do it. It's a group situation thing. And I was told by two colonels who said, you know, it's normal, Kay. This is just what we do in battle, you know.
This is just good old boys?
This is just what we do, Kay.
They get drunk and they
Get drunk and they ejaculate. They beat each other off. You know, it's awful. Now, I'm not God, and I'm not going to judge them and their souls. This is a well-oiled system. And when you've got the commandant, well-known as a cherry marine.
Which means?
Bottom. They're the bottom. The Navy guys are on the top. Think about this, because Walter Chrysler in Norfolk, each port has a hierarchy. Wealthy at the top. Walter Chrysler and Phil Hornthal. Everybody in Norfolk knows that. Where'd they meet? In the Navy. I was engaged to Jack Mace when I was at the Virginia Center for World Trade. He ran the Maritime Association, the Shipping Association. Always dealt with the labor union guys. Always all male banquets. And I couldn't understand why, you know, I was engaged and I couldn't even go to the 1,000-man banquet. You know, had a big argument about that. Rock Hudson, where did he meet his guy? Navy. Jim Nabors, Navy. All of these guys, Navy. So they're tapped for whatever it is, acting, singing, you know. The point is, Liberace, you know.
Was he Navy?
I believe he was. I know that he was, someone told me that he was a friend of one of the guys in Norfolk. There was a ring, a VMI ring of men in Norfolk, and I knew they met once a month, and some of them were married, some of them weren't. But they were all Navy. They were Army, Navy. In other words, it was kind of a group of men in Norfolk. And then I found out that the organizations, like right now, the Al-Anon is run by homosexuals. the Better Business Bureau, the Community Fund, which is the, I forget what it's called now. I'm so old. I'm 55. It used to be called the Community Fund. That guy. There, Jack Mays, you know. And I'm wondering which one is it. You know, I mean, they all are. And the guys know it. So what's going on here? You know, they know it. Old Dominion University, the Clyburn intelligence family. He was well known. Two reporters on the Virginian Pilot who do the very important columns and so forth. I mean, it's just... So I'm saying, who's making the decisions to do this? They're military. What is the reason behind it? Why do they keep the wives out of the loop?
Mm-hmm. So when people suggest that the United States of America is becoming a modern-day Sodom and Gomorrah...
Absolutely, without
it. This really is not just a broad generalization.
No.
That this club, as it's grown over the years, and then placing and promoting the key people in every strata of life.
Right, banking.
Mm-hmm. Then the whole thing, not only the military is run by degenerates and top heavy with degenerates.
Yeah.
People who are moral can't possibly move their way up because
they
don't qualify.
Them. They kill them, they get rid of them.
But they can't be controlled.
No. One example, I was the executive secretary for the Virginia Center for World Trade had a board of the most important, supposedly the most important leaders who were picked out by Jerry Weiner. Mm-hmm. I was a shill for that. I had, you know, done a lot of great things at Old Dominion. They wondered why I did it because they don't understand Christians. Mm-hmm. And he knew I was a worker, so they hired me to go over to the World Trade Center, the Virginia Port Authority. I had an office in there. And Jerome Weiner, what's interesting is Mary Clark Calab worked for him.
Okay.
The girl who had my job, who was a normal woman like me, because there were a few who were not so normal, like Bobby Bray. Not the Bobby Bray who ran the Port Authority, but another Bobby Bray. He was very nice, but he was a known homosexual, who worked with Weiner. But his secretary was pushed out of a window. Now, it was all hushed up.
Of course, she committed suicide.
Yeah, this was a young mother who had a baby who knew too much about his money laundering. I reported the money laundering that Book and Weiner... Now, this is a professor, head of international programs at Old Dominion University, Jerry Weiner, whose father was very high up in this Zionist group.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Weiner was doing intelligence work in Algeria, in Morocco in particular. He organized this board that I was the secretary for. He was a very sick, mean guy. I mean, you talk about really water. But Jack Mace was on the board. And there was a banker on the board.
We can take a break.
Take a break.
Yeah, don't. Did you stop it yet?
No.
No, don't stop it. We'll just leave these synchronized. And is your wife getting a cup?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I was thinking I could use a little
drink. But Gustavo.
Do you need to use the restroom or anything?
Yeah, no, I'm fine. I'm thirsty.
Yeah,
but Gustavo, I love the guy. He was from Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
He was. In Virginia National Bank, which is now Nations Bank. And, you know, I didn't put him, because I had studied Latin American history under a wonderful Dr. Blossom. I knew a lot of stuff about Latin America and Nariño and how Panama became a part of our country. And, you know, now, I mean, I understand it was drugs and running things through and everything, but... Gustavo was in charge of all the laundering that was going on in Virginia National Bank in the port. And where did he go after that? He went to Florida. And he introduced me to Ana Maria Quintero, whose brother was one of the big mobsters. I mean, the big, you know, Colombian. You know, I met Ana Maria Quintero. See, I don't forget some things like this. It's that's why they don't like me, because I imprint on wonderful foreign people. I want to know them. I want to send Christmas cards, and it's not very good to have somebody like a little magnet. I'm sort of like a Monica, you know.